In general, the projects run from 3 to 4 years in the project cycle. Further that we convert that knowledge into something that can be used in society and in the real world. In addition to individuals, we also are concentrating on developing institutions, and we're happy to say that in the period in question, out of the project portfolio we had, 67 of those projects were actually headed up by HCI. This is a new feature in the WRC portfolio. We've always had HCI as a partner in the project. In fact, in at least 50% of our projects, we have HCI partners, but we're now moving into project leadership in the historically disadvantaged institution. We also had a change in the project leadership ratio, which is primarily white and primarily male, and increasingly, we are continuing to have project leaders from the designated group. And in the year in question, we targeted 35. We managed to get 39 projects in this domain. We're also very keen on organizing for communities, not just to be the subjects of research. You know, some people have made an assessment. If they took all of the research funding around health, for example, in places like Alexandra and Khayelitsha, and converted that to actual prevention, these are two places that might have extreme health disease. And this is the nature of research. Sometimes it just has a subjective approach. And what we've been doing actively is organizing for community-based research projects that we can just be part of the portfolio. And we've met this target in the year in question. Now, part of the toolbox around getting practitioners to do their job better is to use the new knowledge in the form of manuals and guidelines and support and materials. And in this domain, we managed to supersede targets in the year in question and in question. We have a popular publication called The Water Wheel, and I'm sure all members are currently recipients of The Water Wheel. If you're not, you must prepare that. And we produce this at least 6 times a year, and sometimes we have the opportunity of special editions. And in the 2013-14 year, there was a special edition on groundwater, and this is critically important. And you know this is a vital part of the NWRS2 around developing our groundwater resources. And also we are bombarded by very controversial issues like shale gas harvesting and unconventional gas use and the groundwater implications. So the special edition was very well received. In addition to that, we have a journal publication, a peer-reviewed journal that's hosted by the WRC called Water SA. It is the highest rated academic journal that is water specific in South Africa currently, and you have 5 issues in this year, and it accommodated the visa 2012 special edition issue coming out of the conference. And then in addition to that, we have a number of publications, the Water Information Network publications for WIN SA on a variety of matters that give practitioners in particular the ability to access knowledge to make big differences to the work that they do. We have superseded our targets associated with workshops and dialogues, and we have a new system in place that's been running now for 3 years around directly engaging cabinets on key knowledge issues in the form of ministerial and policy briefs, and we have met those targets as well. Moving on a bit further, this is what our human resources look like currently. We are an organization predominantly comprising people from designated groups. We are 70% black and 58.3% female as well. These are the stats in the year in question. The stats are a little bit higher as we speak currently. Now, here is a summary of financial information, and you will see for the year in question that we depend primarily on the levy, the water research levy that's associated with the raw water pricing for bulk water. In the year in question, we managed to do fairly well in the leverage space. I'm happy to say, in the subsequent year, we've been able to do even better. This will be reported in next year as well. And then our expenditure is primarily about the research project, as it should be. The levies, as a percentage of income, is around above 80, and the other sources, what we call leverage income, is approaching 19% of the period of time. As I said, this is something that's going to be Now, the WRC has a strong balance sheet, it has no unfunded liability. The trade and receivable are in the property the ladies primarily, with very few others. And the cash situation of the WRC in the year in question, and including the current year, is quite strong. I'm not going to go through any detail of these matters, because all of these are expanded on in some detail inside the annual report. Suffice to say that in direct disbursement, we have maintained a high ratio. In the year in question, we're 73.3% direct disbursement on the research project. So this is not something that dedicated resources inside the WRC. Now, this is a group report because the WRC has a subsidiary, it's called H706, and it is the building in which we are housed, and it is 100% owned, and there are no difficulties associated with that subsidiary of the accounting. Under the matter of the audits, the positive thing to point out is that the number of audits comments that we have received from the Auditor General in this round has been a lot fewer than before, but there are two issues. The first is a matter of emphasis, and that matter of emphasis is around the smartness of the indicator set of WRC, and this we have already remedied quite quickly. And the essential point here is that, and the Auditor General was quite right on this point, it's good that your community of practice understands exactly what you're talking about in the APT, but the job of an APT is to make sure that everybody else also understands. And using the National Treasury format, we have remedied this issue. The second issue is a qualified opinion on trade and receivable. Although it is stated as the entire trade and other receivables of 45 million, the amount in question is actually 8.4 million. And Let me emphasize that this is not a bad debt. There is no money owing to the WRC. This is a misstatement error in the annual financial statement. And this we have discussed at length, both with the Auditor General and board and various other players, and I will talk about this in the remedy table shortly. So Chair, what we have put down here, without any exception of all of the comments that came from the Auditor General of South Africa, and how we are responding to each of those issues, what kinds of time frames are involved, and there is also a responsible person within WRC management to make sure this happens. So the first issue was the issue of the matter of emphasis, and that is the annual performance plan was not adequately defined for public consumption. Well, we can't do anything about the 2013-14 year, of course, but what we have done immediately is we have updated the APT. I apologize, Chair, this part may not have been understood. It wasn't part of the original.
Just looking, where is that important?
My apologies. I will talk to it in more detail if you don't have a document in front of you. So the current annual performance plan, which is the 2014-15 year, has now been updated with the comments received from the Auditor General and in line with the National Treasury format. And what it means is that it doesn't alter what the objectives are. It has additional parts of the document that actually explains in detail what each of those indicators mean and how they are measured and where the information is sourced. So this has already been completed. The second issue is the issue associated with qualified opinion, and this is the overstatement in trades and receivables. And then associated with that is the prior year receivables and statements, because it affects the opening balances and closing balances, which means it affects the years around it. Now, this is a serious matter for the WRC, and this is something we have not encountered before. We have remedied the the annual financial statements internally and our confidence about what we're representing as trade and receivables, but this was not done in time for the Auditor General to be able to redo a comprehensive audit on this and offer a different opinion. We have been in discussion with them continuously, and we have agreed on a series of measures, and these are the measures that are currently being addressed. So in addition to correcting the annual financial statements, we have engaged an independent review by KPMG on the levy funding and the trade and receivables as a whole. And among the various things it's going to do, and this work is currently underway, is auditing the reconciliation of all debt labor auditors issued from the period before and the period after, including the period in which. The second is that the WRC review is running in parallel, and this is almost complete as we speak. We have to look at the strengthening of the monthly reconciliation. There has always been a monthly reconciliation that has culminated in the quarterly reports. We have taken this up a notch. So this is something that citizens are not really speak of. And the first test point of that is the current report. And the quarter two group report that is currently being finalized with conditions of the minister, and thus far all issues are in hand. We also have to go back and review our planning and evidence system for trade and receivables, and the system is currently underway, and the control systems are also being reviewed. So we'll get a brief from the auditor that all of these measures would constitute the interest and would make way for the full audit at the end of the financial year. And our full expectation is that this comment will be removed from the Then moving on, Chair, to the other matters related to the general in the management comment. There was an instance in the sample tested of irregular expenditure associated with the pre-quote system, and we have tightened up our billing checklist and certification template in this matter. Then we had one instance of where the lowest point on the procurement scale was used, although it was used with good reason. And we have to ensure that we have the right kind of documentation associated, the reasons associated with those deviations, and this is now in hand. We had an instance where the executive approved a procedure where it was phase two of a project. And the methodology dependency meant that the same service provider had to continue from phase one to phase two. We thought we had done sufficiently by organizing for an executive decision around this. The AP said that in addition to the executive decision, there also needs to be a waiver approval by the CEO, and this is now part of our protocol. And the rest of those issues are of a very similar vein. And you must guide me as to whether or not we should go through any of those in any detail. But what you can see is that they're either completed or in the process of being completed in the October timeline, except for one issue, and that's around some outstanding assets that need to be barcoded, and that's going to take a little bit longer because that involves an external service provider. So in short, from where we sit, we think we have adequately addressed all of the issues that have been raised in the audit report. So, Chair, in the few minutes that I have left, I thought it would be useful to talk about some of the highlights in the report. I will also do this very briefly because our core business is the business of R&D, and in this period of time, together with our partners in government and outside, we've done quite well as a country. Now, we have spoken to the Portfolio Committee before about the lighthouses, and these are the new trusts inside the WRC system. And it's worth emphasizing here that the water energy food sector has become one of the issues of our time. It is now something that has a very core focus, as does climate change. Governance is closely associated with supporting the implementation of the new legislative framework for water and sanitation management in the country. Green Village refers to off-grid systems for both water solutions and power solutions, usually in a combined way. And we have some excellent examples of this. And one of the points worth noting is that this was presented to the MINMEC of EDD as a pilot, and they have endorsed this to become part of a 100 million proposal to the European ETS for rollout in South Africa. Very, very real. This is about the last mile connection where your normal infrastructure is simply not going to do. And the idea of having independent solutions for both power and water and waste management is what the core of this. The last point is about urban design and about urban design being water sensitive. So a few of the highlights there directly from the year in question. We've done a lot of work around supporting the department's endeavors to have a rollout of functional CMAs across the country. We're working a lot with the two current operational CMAs and doing a fair amount of capacity building work and other research work to support the development of capital management strategies in the other seven areas. We've completed a seminal piece of work on groundwater governance, and this is both around managing water within our environment as well as managing international groundwater. And one of the big aquifers sits below ourselves in Namibia and Botswana, and together with UNESCO, we have a mega project around organizing how groundwater is governed across boundaries, and this is going to be used by UNESCO as a model case study to be used elsewhere in the world. One of the very large projects that has had tremendous knock-on effects around empowering communities is using a social franchising model to provide sanitation solutions for rural communities. And in this case, it's a large project that was done in the Eastern Cape, and this was a project around getting sanitation solutions for 400 schools as a demonstration project. And the idea wasn't to bring consultants in from elsewhere into the job. The idea was you train people who are on the ground to develop enterprises. They do the job, and they in turn become available to do this kind of work in the United States. This had a multiple impact factor, so much so that we are currently finalizing the negotiations with African Development Bank, who together with the Department of Education in the Eastern Cape is now going to roll this out throughout the province. I think this is going to have a very, very significant impact. Moving a bit further around empowering communities, and this is about putting knowledge to good use, and some of the examples worth citing here. One is gender, water, and development. Trevor spoke earlier about the conference that we will be having in November. Well, there's been a long international build-up to this over the last couple of years, and this is going quite well. And we have the first African study on a regional approach for gender, water, and development in the world. So Africa will be the first in the world, and this will be spoken about at the conference. But in addition to that, a few other highlights. One is around smallholder irrigation solutions for farming activities that are headed by rural women, and this has had tremendous impact. And then in addition to that, we've done some seminal work around indigenous crops and their nutritional value and how to take them scale to become a very, very significant part of the food value chain. Sanitation is a challenge of our time, and all of the members of the portfolio committee were at the Water and Sanitation Summit, where this was linked. And what WRC did in the year in question is it really took our work on low flush and low flush systems to a higher level, and this is also when we initiated together with Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Eight-country Southern African-wide project headed up by the WRC that demonstrated solutions on the ground in all of these countries, one of which I'm happy to say, the project in Kampala, Uganda, has won this year's Royal Society of Engineering Prize. Now, water sensitivity in the city is a complicated concept, but essentially it's about saying we should organize redesign cities so that they are both water and sanitation sensitive, and this is going to be a very large contribution we are going to be able to make in the years to come. On new products and services, these go at different scales. a smaller scale, and the picture is on the right hand side, is associated with a small bottle that can contain a liter of water, where in the same bottle you can take the water out of the river on the one side, it passes through a filter at the bottom which can be unscrewed and used to give you drinking quality water. Now, this is quite an amazing solution. It's already being used as a first measure intervention in emergency situations in some parts of the world, and eventually maybe we can roll this out into the South African environment at scale. There is a manufacturing question involved. The contribution on the left is a very important one, and this is about the energy-water nexus and the dependence. We've all read and heard loads and loads about Gauteng water crisis recently, which was not a water crisis. It was in fact an electricity crisis that had its expression I'm talking about this region. I'm saying that it wasn't about the lack of availability of water. And the lack of availability of electricity and water expressed itself in the scarcity of water. But the compendium is very important for an important reason. What it pulls out is best practice in the South African environment, which, if rolled out, will not organize only for better water efficiency and availability, but will also organize for energy efficiency in the system. So, for example, one of the things that has won an international award is the work done in Everton for Renaissance, where a computer-based dynamic pressure valve regulation system is managing to save 33% of the water in the place and concomitantly some 20,000 kilowatt hours of electricity and the associated carbon emissions. So, Chair, let me make this my second last slide, and this is around the sustainable development solution. One is around water safety. We have many water crises around the country bubbling up at various times, and we have a set of new tools coming out of our work that will allow people to, in a stepwise manner, manage the immediate crisis and then build up from that into a more sustainable situation. The project on the right-hand side wants to emphasize examining both the hydrodynamic savings as well as the socio-economic benefit of rehabilitation of biodiversity. Yeah, I shall make this my last slide then. A very big part of what we do is human capital development with various partners, primarily universities and schools. And on the left-hand side, you will see the Young Water Professionals, which is a global movement, and it has a very vibrant South African chapter that's strongly supported by our institution, developing the water engineers and the water academics of tomorrow. And we balance that up by having a significant number of new initiatives targeted directly at school kids, and one of our publications is Water at Work, encouraging young people to come into the water game with a variety of options to look at. So, Chair, maybe I should pause right there because I've overrun my time, and if you want to go to the other slide, I'm happy.
Thank you,
Alan. Essentially, our corporate social responsibility is not about donating in a classical way of corporate. It's about using the knowledge in our projects to make material differences to people on the ground. And a couple of examples worth emphasizing is the work that we've done around Harry Urban areas, kind of areas and slums and orphanages and schools around sanitation and sustainable water.
Thank you. The slides that you have done, that is not in our case, I think you will send to the second time so that we can send to other members. So when we do our report, we should look at it. I think it's not a crisis, just a alternative. We saw the importance of this life to be
Can you break for lunch?